It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Come on, there we go. All right, here we are. I appear to have a lag, so those of you watching on YouTube, it's going to be weird for a while. Based on my previous experiences, it'll get better. So the word hero, it's tossed around a lot. And normally when somebody says that, they're now going to make a pitch for how somebody is a hero, usually themselves. That's how the joke works. I'm going to make a pitch for us to stop fucking tossing the word hero around. It's starting to annoy me. Sorry, I had a text which I thought could be an emergency. It's not at all. I got my hair cut. See how nice that is? The other day. And it's a place that shares an entryway with a coffee house. As I was leaving the place with my mask on, my salon place is really good. Like, you have to sign a form before and you show up and you call and you tell them you're there. And then they let you in when it's time. And there's only like four chairs in the place. They're very cautious. As I'm leaving, there's a coffee house across the way. And it's open. And it has a sign on the front that says, "Be a hero. Please wear a face mask when you're in here." I appreciate the sentiment of wear a face mask while you're in here. Why would that make you a fucking hero? I mean, let's set aside the fact that anything that is just an inconvenience is not heroic, no matter what it is. It's not heroic to take food to the food bank if it's not like the last food you have and the food bank isn't like in another country. It's nice. It's great. It's wonderful. You should be proud. Not heroic. On top of that, wearing a face mask thing isn't even a good thing. It's a bare minimum thing. It's like, hey, be a human, not a jackass. That'll make you a hero. It's getting out of control. In fact, this is where it gets controversial and we lose all of our many listeners. I'm going to go so far to say, being in the military, being a police officer, or being a medical professional, or being a fireman does not automatically make you a hero. Just having those jobs does not mean you're a hero. Now, those jobs do require some sacrifice in a lot of cases, and they definitely put you in circumstances where you might be heroic a lot more often. And, you know, per capita, I'm willing to go out on a limb and say there are probably more heroes in those fields than there are heroes who sell cars or wait tables or things like that. Probably. They're a higher percentage because there is more opportunity there to do that kind of thing. And it's not bad, but just having the job of fireman doesn't make you a hero. You're weirdly quiet about this. Are you? You're not on my side with this bit here.
I don't know. I've never. I mean, we've talked about heroism before, and the way I've defined it is that heroism is when you do something that's morally laudable but not morally obligatory. For example, when a building's on fire and there's someone in there calling for help, nobody's going to think that the people standing around not rushing in are evil because they understand that, well, they could, you know, that's a risk to their life. I mean, they could run in there and not only not fail to save this person, but die themselves. So it's there's no moral obligation for anyone to rush into that burning building. However, if someone does do that, really, whether they're successful or not in saving the person, that would be considered, I think, by most people, an heroic act. Now, so given that, as you said, a lot of people in those occupations that you named do, as you said, they do have opportunities to do heroic things. But just having the job, I mean, I definitely see your point as it's like, you know, on one hand, it seems like we ought to reserve the term hero for people who do something heroic. And the fact of the matter is,
I'm super happy to hear what the other hand of that is. That argument was so airtight, it was almost tautological.
Well, right. But I mean, for example, you know, it would probably not be that hard to find a police officer who's been a police officer for years and never had to draw their weapon, never really been in a particularly dangerous situation or whatever. So it's like,
I feel like this is a component of it, because I agree, and I remember our conversation, morally laudable but not morally obligatory. But I think there is a component of sacrifice involved, because donating to charity as a donating any amount to charity, morally laudable, not morally obligatory. I don't think it's heroic if I mean, there's a few organizations I'm giving $10 a month to currently. I don't consider that heroic.
Although you did say, you did leave it the possibility open that giving to charity might be heroic if, like, you don't really have enough to give to charity, but you're
taking there is an element of sacrifice.
Right.
Yeah. Also, like, not heroic is not a low, like lots of wonderful things, laudable things, things that make you a good person, things that you should be proud of, things that make you stand above the average person, still aren't heroic.
Right.
Like, it's I'm not saying any of these are bad. I'm saying that word, it's turning into awesome. The word awesome originally was a cosmic term. I mean, was a term of existential wonder and dread. And now it just means cool. And I don't like that happening with hero.
Well, the other hand I was going to bring up was that, you know, people go into these, okay, all kinds of people go into these professions, and not all of them are good people. Okay, but I think on average, or more than average, more than the average amount of time, I mean, I think the people that go into these professions feel a calling, for lack of a better term, you know, to do something to sort of give back. And a lot of these people would not consider themselves heroes either. They wouldn't call themselves that, what, either for just taking the job, but even for doing the job. But I tend to think that, you know, for example, I didn't join the military. I didn't want to join the military. If there had been a draft, I'm not sure what I would have done. I don't think I would have, you know, dodged it, but I would have been petrified of going into the military. But the same thing is true for being a police officer or a fireman. I don't think I would have felt that way about being, say, like a medical professional or an EMT or something. But, you know, maybe an EMT, depending on what kinds of things I would be expected to do. I do think there's a certain amount of courage and a lot of times humility that's involved in people taking those occupations.
And a lot of them do a lot of heroic things.
Yeah.
Not everyone who has the job automatically does.
No, that's true. But I'm just saying, I think
there's also a lot of people went into the military because their SAT scores suck.
Right. But
I've known many of them.
But and I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I just do tend to think of those people sort of default heroic for a variety of reasons. I don't think what you're saying is wrong, though. I think you're...
What about people who wear masks into coffee houses?
Well, I mean, I think that's just a bit of, you know, that's someone saying, I don't know if the person who came up with this little idea necessarily thinks people who wear masks are heroic, but they're trying to plug into some emotional thing to get to, because we're to get a person to do it.
They think people who are considering not wearing masks are dumb enough to think that they're heroic if they wear a mask.
Well, maybe, but see, to the person who made that advertisement, it doesn't, as long as they can get the person to put the mask on, they don't care if they feel heroic or not. And if this is a way to get them to do it, it's kind of like with kids, you know, sometimes you'll tell a kid,
sometimes,
hey,
you lie to kids so they'll do what you want. I understand.
Well, it doesn't even have
to me many times.
It doesn't even have to be a lie. It can just be something, you know, that, oh, go do this. And I'll give you a cookie, and, you know, to make them think this is a big thing they're doing when it's not. You just want to keep them busy for a little while. It's not really I guess it is a lie. Now,
bribery I'd be into. If they're bribery, like, wear a mask in here, we'll give you a cookie.
Well, it's a kind of bribery if they're saying, wear a mask in here.
Wear a mask in here, we'll call you a hero.
Yeah. Right, that's kind of what I'm getting at.
And I'm saying it almost makes me not want to wear one in there. Almost. Like, I don't consider myself a hero, so I'll just take this off.
Unfortunately, the term hero is problematic in our culture for a lot of reasons.
And I mess with my own head here, because, like, I'm playing games that involve Greek heroes and stuff, and the heroic deeds frequently don't involve an element of sacrifice. It's just, these people were awesome. Sorry to use that term. These people were had incredible skill or natural talent and successfully did a cool thing. So it's heroic.
I mean,
again, and it's not, I don't mean to denigrate any acts that people are currently calling heroic, except maybe just wearing a mask in a goddamn coffee house. I just feel like I don't know. Here's what it largely came down to. I saw the sign, thought, that's dumb. Fast forward to today, I was like, I need something to talk about in the open for the podcast. How about that stupid sign? And here we are.
And here we are.
Hello, yes! Everyone. All right, we can't talk about it anymore. I've spoken.
Okay.
What were we gonna say?
I was just gonna say I like the hero concept. I like the term. I like hero stories, but I recognize for some people in our culture, and because of ways our culture has sort of twisted and maligned that concept, you know, I sometimes, when I'm talking about these hero concepts and hero stories that I like, I have to, you know, put caveats in, or I've got to use a different type of terminology, or it's unfortunate. That's such,
I tell
cool...
you the tale of Orion of the Mountain Tribe, and the day he set forth, get a tall mocha and wore a mask.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is like The Simpsons. We're not successful like The Simpsons. We're not good like The Simpsons. Mostly, we're like The Simpsons in two ways. We have a fat guy that features prominently, and we will never ever stop. I'm Tony,
and I'm trying to figure out which Simpsons character I am.
I've been doing that. I've had this in the chamber for 2 weeks.
Maybe
I've been trying to figure out who you are.
I'm William, and this is episode 513.
I mean, you're probably just Hans Molman.
I don't know if I know who that is.
He's a guy who dies in a lot of episodes. He's a very old, wrinkly man. Oh. He just accidentally dies often.
I was afraid you were going to call me Milhouse or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or wait.
What did I think of that?
Don't you? Haven't you said I'm Ned Flanders?
If you're lucky, you're Martin Prince.
Haven't you said I'm Ned Flanders?
I mean, our relationship is like Homer to Ned Flanders. So some of that. But I mean, I'm not solidly Homer anyway. I'm just.
That's true.
I'm Homer's phenotype.
Okay, that sounds right.
Could be the title. Could be the title of this episode. We'll have to see. Yeah. For those of you just joining us here, we have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and people, all sorts of people, like five people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically on its own transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, Simpson-esque servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour or longer, and that's the show, except for the parts that aren't, which is most of it. Or we get into some shit. I want to talk about some shit.
Sure.
Craig, famous Craig, of the podcast Craig. Like, you design RPGs? I guess Chris. He's not gonna answer. I follow on Twitter, and a couple things have come up recently that imply he designs RPGs. I know he puts out zines, which I love you anyway. Never really gotten the zine. Is that when, like, you've got too much for a pamphlet? I don't really get zine. Anyway, I think I even bought one on Kickstarter, but I don't get it. Craig, you design RPGs. Tell us about it. Tell us what you do, what ones, and where I can get them. Because I'm always looking for new RPGs, especially indie ones from people who I know for a fact don't suck, which doesn't come up too often, so this would be a rare opportunity. Between you and Dave Avid, I could be set for a while. I'm really looking for something minimal with very few rules, because I'm bad at the rules, and my players are usually bad at following the rules, so we just want to fake it. So if you've got a game like that, tell me. All right, how was your week?
Good. Still play testing with Dave.
Yes.
And
yes.
The gang. That's
the gang.
It's really fun. This was a session, and this happens to me often, as I think I've said, or you could probably imagine, where afterwards I was not feeling very confident about, you know, how I did, but you know, you just sort of hang in there. Keep on plugging away.
It happens more often than not, usually. At least for me, it always has, both as a GM and as a player. I'm always, as much as I try not to, I have like hopes and expectations in my head for each session, and then they don't go that way, because of course they don't. So I always feel like I screwed up. My latest one, because I'm doing this investigation type thing, it's hard. Because I already know that as a GM, I never know what my players are going to think of and what direction they're going to take things. So I'm like, okay, we got this, and there's clues here, and there's clues here. And they're like, what about this? And I'm like, I don't even think that's a thing that you just came up with. I didn't, or they're like, they jump to a new conclusion. I'm like, that's not. I mean, I know the answer is I have to find a way that their thing like ties back in, but I'm very bad at it.
Well, in this one I had, see that the thing is my character is kind of a fringe character. I mean, in previous games, it's turned like, out that
like hair, like,
fringe. No, like it, in previous sessions, it's turned out that my character doesn't do a whole lot, but that fits, it works. I mean, cause you know, he's sort of kind of watching from the wings and trying to figure out how he can exploit a certain situation. So this session started with my character doing an unusual amount of talking. And that wasn't the problem. But also the scheme that Bill had didn't work out at all. All the roles went bad, all of them.
Ah.
That also wasn't a problem.
Because that can be really fun, depending on how it goes bad.
Right. Well, in this case, it didn't necessarily go anywhere. But it didn't matter because, I mean, the way I had planned to do this, it matters. Well, it doesn't really matter either to Bill or to me that it didn't work out because, you know, I already had a plan B and a C and whatever that I haven't done anything with, but you know, that was already, I was fine with it is what I'm saying. What concerned me afterwards was that the character came off annoying to everybody else, you know, because I don't know. I feel like I portrayed Bill faithfully to that character. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a problem with what I did per se again. And I don't have a problem with how it turned out because I sort of anticipated certain things and I had other plans in place. So that wasn't a problem. But I didn't want to annoy people, and I didn't think that it was going to annoy people, and it didn't feel like while I was doing it that it annoyed anybody. But then afterwards, when all this other stuff's going on and I'm kind of sitting there waiting for something to do, I'm going, did I just annoy a whole bunch of people? Okay.
Well, the useful thing here is that's all in your mind, so you're fine.
But yeah, probably.
Situations do arise. Well, I'm just saying, like you just said, don't think I did anything annoying and nobody acted annoyed, but later I found myself thinking, did I annoy people? Right. Like,
yeah.
Based on that information, the answer is no.
Yeah, probably not. That's right.
But this does come up in gaming a lot. And the crux of the matter is, did you annoy the other characters or did you annoy the other players? Because if it's the first one, not only is that not bad, that can often be a good thing. It can be really fun. As long as the players are enjoying, God, you're really fucking up my guy's plans in a way that's like fun. Or my character would hate yours. This dynamic is hilarious. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I was
annoying the players, then it's a different issue, which is still not necessarily your issue. It could be their issue, but it becomes a thing.
Bill was interacting with an NPC, so
so you're worried that the imaginary person was annoyed.
No, more of a, I mean, it, okay. Like
you took up a lot of time and they had to sit there not doing anything.
That's part of it.
That can be a concern.
It took That was one thing I was thinking was that take too much time. Also, the character, I mean, Bill was being a little, obnoxious for lack of a better term, but again, I think that's just what he would do. But some people can be amused by that. Some people can not care. And other people are like, man, I just wish this guy would shut up so I could, you know, in other words, maybe it was only seemed too long because the character was so obnoxious. So I don't know.
Wasn't being obnoxious. I mean, if you're being obnoxious to another player character, again, if the player is annoyed, that can be a thing. If you're being obnoxious in a way that, like, screws over everyone else, like, we have this plan to go convince this guy to do something for us, then you show up and like swear at this guy a whole bunch. That could be bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it was either of those.
No, no.
The time thing can be a thing. It depends on who you are. Somebody like me, I love watching other people role play.
I do too.
That's fine. But again, I will say this. 90 to 95% of monitoring that and dealing with that is on the GM. If the GM has players that he knows will not like sitting around for a long time, not doing anything, he needs to make sure there's stuff to do and that it's not being monopolized. As long as you're not one of those players who's like, I'm going to do this. Okay, you do that. So anyway, and I'm also going to do this. All right. As long as you're not forcing your way into the time, if the GM's guiding you through a thing and it takes however long, the GM's responsible for how long that's taken.
Yeah.
And also, based on what you've said, I think the odds are very low that it bugged anybody. But these are good things to think about. And it's a fun balance because role-playing games are not method acting.
No, that's right.
Because, or they're not supposed to be.
Yeah,
method
yeah.
acting makes for a shitty role-playing game.
Yeah,
there are
yeah.
times where you say, my character would do this. And if my character did that, the game would die, or everyone would hate them, or that would right. be boring as shit. And so you have to mediate it. Like, well, okay, my character could instead do something like this. Or, you know, because of XYZ reasons, this time they have an urge to do this instead. Like, you want to balance it out. You want to be true to the character, as long as being true to the character doesn't grind the game to a halt.
Right, right. That's right.
And the questions you're having are key keeping that happening. So.
Well, you know, I'm such an inexperienced player.
Yeah, although you're not going to be able to say that for much longer. You've done quite a bit of this now.
And also, I approach it from a different, you know, I do approach it from, say, acting or writing or something like that. And as you just pointed out, it's not the same thing. You can't just do what you do in acting or writing or whatever. You've got to maybe call on some of those skills, but make them fit to the gaming situation.
Yes.
And I guess I still don't feel comfortable enough in that situation to feel confident that I'm, you know, always getting it right, or even most of the time getting it right.
And the big one is improv, which you've got some skills in.
Yeah.
But the good news is, once again, most of that's on the GM. Like, filtering your decisions through, as a player character, through what would make the game better is, to me, at least an intermediate or an advanced skill.
Hmm.
Beginners are more about, you know, well, what would my character do?
Yeah.
And the GM's responsible for finding a way to make it not suck or make it not kill, you know, stuff like that. I'm still at the point, I think I had this a while back. So the game we're playing now, you have a spaceship and you go to different planets and you investigate stuff. They built into the world that spaceship security is incredibly good and lethal and stuff. Like, there's so many cheap over-the-counter ways to make it so your ship will explode or kill people, or like, and the reason they did this, they're very blatant about it, is they're like, it's no fun to stay on the ship. Like, that's, if you're not doing things remotely or whatever, you're the guy who stays on the ship to make sure nobody steals it. That's lame. So built it. There's a lot of things that they're like, we made it this way because it would suck otherwise.
Yeah.
First adventure, something happened to their ship and somebody hacked it basically and made it shit while they were still on the ship.
Mm.
Got that resolved. And then they need to go down the planet to do their thing. And they're like, should one of us stay here in case it happens again? And I'm like, well, no, you've got a lot of security stuff and people don't usually mess with it. And I'm like, yeah, but still, we got hacked. Well, you figured out by the way you got hacked that there's pretty much nothing you could do about it if they do. Yeah, but we should. And finally I was like, okay, guys, out of character time, I'm not going to do anything to your ship unless it's a plot point. It would be super lame for one of you to have to stay up here. Yeah. Nobody stay behind. Yeah. And they took it. They're like, oh, yeah, no, that's cool. We'll do it. And I felt bad because we had to break in to do that. They were just part of the problem with having played for so many years at so many different ages in so many different games is there's a lot of second guessing. And so they're like, oh, we could. And I had to just be like, it's not happening. You're fine.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to stick around. Yeah. All right. Anything interesting besides the game?
I mean, Abby's playing Spider-Man and doing
whatever a spider can.
And it feels like Batman Arkham games is what it's just basically that, except
that's a good sign.
New York instead of Gotham and Peter Parker instead of Bruce Wayne. And if someone thinks, yeah, but Peter Parker has superpowers, the way they do Batman in the Arkham games, you know, his fighting style and fighting abilities are so outrageous. Plus whatever his suit can do, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean,
I think he's got grappling guns that basically work like the web.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, when I first suggested to Abby that this is just a Batman Arkham game, she agreed to a point, but then said, oh, but the controls are all different and the UI is all different. But once that became more intuitive to her, she was like, yeah, this is just a Batman Arkham game, which isn't bad. Right. Arkham games.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like Spider-Man, and we like that Peter Parker in this game is like in his 20s. He's not even in college. He's like in his 20s. He's
no longer a student.
He's no longer a student because when we were growing up, when Abby and I were growing up and we were reading Spider-Man in the newspapers, right? Because there was a strip, daily strip of the newspapers. He was he was like in his 30s or something.
In the comics, he graduated college in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it was kind of cool to see his origin story when Sam Raimi made those films and stuff.
Which time?
Yeah, but then, you know, he's been in high school every single new iteration. A lot of people are thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have an adult Peter Parker like we grew up reading in the newspaper?
Oh, I've seen people rant about it online a lot.
So this is like that.
My Spider-Man, which was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, was a grown-up. I mean, I think he was in his 20s.
Yeah.
Like, he had a job. Well, wait, maybe they went to college. I don't... Spider-Man and Starfire and Iceman, were they in college?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
But he also, you know, science is a big deal. I don't think it's very good science actually, but it's a big deal to him in the game, which that's also a thing that when we were reading him younger, the fact that he was a scientist and developed his own gadgets and stuff was kind of a big deal. And
I know nobody makes memes or GIFs of us, but if someone wants to just separate out, William saying also, science is kind of a big deal. Don't think it's really good science. Like, I really want that.
But I mean, that, you know, that being a part of his character that's like really part of the game, that's kind of fun. So, I mean, she's liking it. And I can't watch it very much because it moves like crazy. I mean, I don't know.
That can be a deal. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was one thing about the Batman Arkham games was I don't remember the camera moving so crazy, but this one does. And so I can't really watch it that often. But I mean, when I can, it's pretty fun to watch. And she likes playing it. So, that's been going on. What about your week?
Well, as you already know, I got the Platinum Trophy in Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yeah.
I've never gotten one of those before.
Wow.
It was pretty neat. Now, it's just for the main game. There's still a lot of stuff. I've been doing some other bits and there's the DLC to do. But instead, I paused play because I said I bought some more games a little while back. Hmm. And so I started playing the remake of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, you talked about that. I mean, you talked about getting it. You didn't talk about playing.
Yeah, I started playing it.
Oh, okay. Doesn't sound good.
I mean, I'm still playing it. My friend who's the real video game nut, and she's the one who I asked about it, and she was like, yeah, it's good enough to be. I mean, I bought it for $30 on sale. I keep yelling at her. I keep telling her how much I hate her and texting her about it. And then when it gets a little better, I'm like, I hate you less. But then there are a lot of factors here. For the most part, I would say, consider how you felt about the original game. And that will probably inform a lot of how you feel about this game. If you never played the original Final Fantasy VII, I'm going to go ahead and say, there's not much reason to play this. And I have very mixed feelings about the original Final Fantasy VII. I played it a few times. I never managed to beat it. This game only is about the beginning of Final Fantasy VII. They're doing it in chunks. And they took what was a very small part of the game and are making it fairly big by adding in new stuff and stuff like that. But it's what was far and away my least favorite part of the game, the original version. And it's just full of so many mini games and stuff. And they've updated a lot of things. There's full voice acting now. The story has more details to it. The basics of the story are the same. And the basics of the story are a sci-fi romance, early 90s Japanese storyline. All of those words together spell don't age well. And they kept a lot of it. Everybody's got the emotional maturity of a 12-year-old. There's a lot of awkward flirting, but not flirting, and like our main character who's a badass fighting guy and has seen hell and has PTSD and everything still gets nervous around women like regularly when they talk to him and stuff. He's also a lot of things that probably would have annoyed me in the original didn't come across as much because there wasn't full motion video and voice acting. So like the main guy is way more of an asshole than I remember. There's this giant black dude with a gun on his hand. That's one of the main characters who's essentially an eco-terrorist. And he was always yelling and blustering and everything. And he would swear a lot, but in the old game, it was just like special characters. And again, not voiced. His voice now, wow, is it racist? Like, wow. Bad. To the degree that there's one line that I'm like, did he just say I'm tired of these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane? And he didn't say that, but it sounded exactly like that. Like, it's a weird, bad Samuel L. Jackson impression in its way. Like, ugh.
Okay.
I'm having issues with that. The combat is real time, but also a little bit turn-based kind of thing that I find really fun. The combat's really cool and the nuances to it are really cool. When they let me fucking fight, there's a lot of like, oh, here, you have to go through this one area and there's monsters, just like four of them. Then we go on to a bunch of shit that doesn't involve fighting. And some of the big fights, I have to sit through 3 minutes of watching them start the fight as a cutscene, and then I get to fight. And it's just, there's so much in between shit I don't care about. Traveling from one place to the other. So it's this whole thing of there's some conversation in the back. And of course, all the conversation's terrible. And we're just traveling and we find the ladder and we go to the next place. Like, it's not even a puzzle. It's just like, follow the path. And the path will take you 10 minutes. And none of this wasn't the case in the original. So if you liked the original, you're fine. I am still playing it. I'm still compelled to play. It still has the materia system, which is their sort of magic and ability system. And I really like it. And I really liked it before. And I'm enjoying that again. But yeah, I don't know. I'm still playing it. I imagine I'll play it all the way through. And I do think they extend things. There's a lot more story elements so that they can make the game a full-sized game. But right now, I'm still in all the shit that I remember that I didn't enjoy as much, that I got through to play the part of the game I liked. So we'll see if that happens here. Also been watching stuff. We finally finished Sabrina. And we were so happy that it was finished.
Terrible ending, though.
So terrible! Yeah. Right on par with the rest of the show, and specifically the rest of the season. Yeah. Also, the last two or three episodes, last three episodes, I'm going to say, threw in random shit that nobody ever needed. Also, just like killed several of its great storylines. And just one thing in particular was a very interesting thing we hinted at the end of last season, and we touched on it in this season, and then we kind of ignored it, and then we absolutely undermined it into the ground for no reason two episodes before the end. Also, if you're going to get really meta about your show, the second to last episode is a weird time to do it if you haven't ever done it before. That was so weird. And again, the last few episodes full of pulling back things that we didn't even remember exist because we've ignored them, not resolving things that did happen, straight up ignoring shit that happened in the last episode or sometimes a few minutes earlier. Yeah, and just the worst ending. So, like,
really bad.
You know how people hate when things don't have consequences? Like how no one in the MCU can die? You know how people feel terrible when there are, like, serious consequences and terrible things happening to the people they love? Somehow this manages to be the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, it was awful.
Like, I simultaneously wish there were more and less consequences in the ending.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm really so bad. Glad that show's done. It is
really bad.
A fucking disaster. Yeah, that's finished. And then we watched a movie that I want to speak about. we watched it last night on Netflix. So almost everybody can watch it except maybe Beth. It's called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Did you watch it?
No, I think we intend to. Wasn't it Chadwick Boseman's last project?
Yes. It is the last thing he did before he died. Here's what I knew going into it. It had Chadwick Boseman in his last performance. It had Viola Davis, unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. Like, it didn't look like somebody wearing a whole lot of prosthetics or something. It looked like a woman that's not Viola Davis. That was being played by Viola Davis. That it involved blues or jazz or something, and it was clearly a period piece.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. That's basically all I knew. So now I'm going to tell you what I know that is not spoilers for it at all, so that you have more setup. Ma Rainey, real woman that existed, known as the mother of the blues. And this entire movie is one recording session. Her recording songs for this particular record company in the late 1920s. And it's her and her band, and her nephew came along, and this woman who's sort of her companion. It's just them, and then her manager and the guy who runs the record place. And it's an hour and a half long, and it's just this recording session. And the very important thing to know that we did not know up front, that we could tell pretty quick, and it makes things a lot less confusing, is it is based off of a play. And it is very clearly based off of a play.
Okay.
Sure. And it is important to understand it's still a play in a lot of ways. I mean, we have different camera angles and stuff, but it's done with so many monologues. It essentially takes place in two rooms. People paying attention, and like it has the sensibilities of a play.
Right.
It's incredible. It's incredible in a way that it's hard. I don't have a lot of specifics to say. It's just really good. It's really powerful. It's really interesting. The performances are amazing. Chadwick Boseman, it made me miss him all the more. Also, if you're going to have a last performance, this was a hell of one.
Yeah.
Viola Davis absolutely disappears in this character in a way I would not have expected from her, knowing how incredible she is. Still, like, topped my expectations. And it's a character that would be really easy to do poorly.
Hmm.
And she doesn't. It's amazing. Everybody in it is amazing. Once again, and he's been showing up a lot lately, Glenn Turman plays he plays the piano player in the band. He's sort of the old fogey of the band, so he's often countering Chadwick Boseman, who's the young buck kind of thing. Amazing. And I've always liked Glenn Turman, and I mean, he's been around forever. I think he did action movies in the 80s and shit. Like, he's been around forever. He's really coming into his own right now. Fargo and this thing, amazing. I've always liked him, but I'm really starting to become a huge fan of his. A lot of people whose names I didn't recognize, but seriously, every single person in this, amazing job. Incredible performances. I feel bad because there's not a lot specific to say, but see it. Everybody should see it. It's really, really, really good. So see it right now. That's the podcast. What? It's an hour and a half. You can do it. And then move on. Here. Finish the episode after you watch it. I'm not talking to listeners. I'm talking to you. Oh, William.
To me? Go right to now. Me?
Yeah. Go watch it. I'll wait here. It's going to be an extra long one, people. Now, all right, you can watch it later. Okay, let's draw something out of the hat, shall we?
Yes, let's do. Beth's catching up.
Yeah, like all at once. Like, today's her day for listening to the podcast. I'm pretty sure I typed a response to one of her comments, and by the time I posted it, she had another comment.
Mm.
Like, she's all about today.
Yep.
And as we know, she writes a shit ton of everything.
Ha ha, Beth!
We love you. Oh, this is a weird-ass one. It's from Azurtalon. I mean, the question itself is not that strange. The whole process is crazy. Excuse me. Hat demoniacs. What are some classic horror films roughly appropriate for a 13-year-old? Signed, Azurtalon. Parentheses, I should have been calling myself Saxophone. All right, there's a few references in here that I'd like to get out of the way, because I know what they are.
Okay.
Demoniacs is the title of a movie. Is by Jean Laurent, the famous sort of like art house erotic horror French director. You definitely should not be showing a 13-year-old that. Don't do that. And the saxophone thing is a Simpsons joke. When you get the story of how Lisa got her saxophone, for some reason Homer mispronounces all the instruments. They go to the instrument shop and they're like, you want a violin or a tuba maboo? And then she picks it and is like, saxophone. I don't know why. Maybe The Simpsons was referencing something I'm not familiar with. But there it is. And I think sprinkled throughout early Simpsons, he refers to it as a saxophone for some reason. Anyway, this is tough. What do you think?
I mean, I think most.
Yeah, you're going to have some really good insight into this because you're going to know some old hookers.
Yeah, I was going to say you could show them just pretty much any of the Universal monster movies, early monster movies. There wouldn't be anything wrong with that. I don't think.
True.
I think
because Edge of Talent says classic, and I'm thinking 70s and 80s, and you hear classic, and you're like, oh, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's fair.
I think you know, if your kid doesn't mind silent stuff, Nosferatu and Phantom of the Opera are both good. Yeah. But also, what was I going to say? Oh, the original 1954 Godzilla, man, that's good. That would be a good one. Besides that, I don't know, because I mean, I didn't really like the stuff that was in the 70s, 80s, or 90s. And I've even tried to watch that stuff. And, you know, basically every time I try to watch some horror from those decades, it just reinforces why I didn't watch them at the time. It's like, yeah, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be. I hate it. Now, Abby liked horror from, you know, various times, but she also is one of those, I mean, I think she's a little like you this way. She like, if it's really terrible, she can still like it, or maybe like it more, you know. But I'm not really into hate watching things, and I don't often, even if I think something
and yet you made it all the way through Sabrina.
Well, you know, I don't know if I'd have watched that by myself. I might have, because sometimes I'll watch a thing because I think, like, some of the acting, some of the actors in it are just fun to watch whatever they're doing. I didn't care, you know. Lucy Davis, I like watching her. I like watching, what's her name? Oh, I can never remember her name. The gal that, like, you said the
Gomez
last
is her last name. Her last name is Gomez, and I keep forgetting her first name.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I just like
Miranda watching. Otto's amazing, and yeah,
exactly. And maybe another part of it was, it's, you know, this was a show that had that really seemed to highlight a good, well-rounded female characters, and it's like, I guess I feel like not only do I like to see that, but I like to support that. So, you know.
I mean, I'm with you entirely, except for the very first thing you said in that point.
Which is?
They were good, well-rounded female characters.
I don't know. You didn't think so?
Absolutely not. No. Hmm. All of them were incredible. They were just shoeboxed in other weird ways. I guess, like I've said many times, this is a show that has heard the word feminism many times and has no idea what it means.
Well, I mean, I think I'm talking about, you know, like it. I'm sometimes giving a lot of credit. For example, one of the sisters, anyway, had a fairly, her character arc was a mess, but one could also read it as she was complicated.
I will give you this about Sabrina. It is a heavily female cast, and the female characters in it have a lot of agency compared to a lot of other shows.
Sure,
are, by and large, the male characters are more secondary in a way that you would normally see flipped. And I will give it credit for that.
Right,
that,
but also...
And that is a good thing.
Also, there wasn't a lot of... I don't really remember any damseling. I don't remember any smurfetting. I think there was probably at least one fridging, but maybe not. I don't know if I can remember for sure. I mean, just the very typical stuff.
Fair bit of damseling in places, and there was a lot of smurfetting.
Really? Because I don't remember any. I don't remember any of that. There just always seemed to be enough female characters talking about things, of course, other than men.
And again, we flipped it several times. We damseled the men, which is nice.
I don't know.
But
I just Yeah, maybe my standards, maybe you're just really low. I don't know. But I wasn't hate watching it. I was just passing the time, you know, and it was. But yeah, I can't. I mean, the movies that I've just mentioned are the ones that I know off the top of my head. I'm not really a fan of this, of some of that other stuff. I have tried to watch it. I have tried to find something in it that I could like. Doesn't do anything for me. So I would never recommend, like, I don't know, Halloween or something like that. Although there are some of those 70s movies that at the time seemed really shocking, but now it's like, I think most 13-year-olds would be able to handle it nowadays.
And,
I don't know.
And that is a consideration, because I assume if you're the type, well, I'm going to assume a lot of things here. I'm assuming Ezra Talon is specifically asking for his daughter, who I'm horrified to hear is 13. But we have been doing this for 10 years, so I guess that is believable. So, if you're the type of parent who says, I have a 13-year-old, how do I introduce them to horror movies? Of all the possible concerns that parents might have about kids watching horror movies, I'm going to say that a parent that is very specifically trying to find a way to bring it to their children is mostly concerned about what's going to fucking give them nightmares.
Sure.
And to a lesser extent, what is potentially going to have really bad messaging, although it's horror movies, so they all kind of do. But, you know, some are worse than others. There are some that are particularly exploitative that you're like, that wouldn't scare my kid. I don't really think my kid should be seeing that kind of shit. And I get that.
Right.
So within that frame, I feel like most slashers are out. Because they're either have the real potential to be scary or very exploitative or both. So I feel like, cause I can't go to like Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween or any of those. I mean, you know, your kid, you could try Exorcist.
Whoa.
Exorcist is a fucking scary movie. Like,
I don't know, man. Exorcist, really? Wow.
I mean, I don't know. Okay. Let's go. Probably not Exorcist. Not Evil Dead. You can get in some PG-13 things. Here's one that actually I think is really good. The Others.
Yeah.
It's arguably not much of a horror story. It's PG-13 and it's more of a ghost story. I think that's a good one. That one gave me nightmares.
Really?
I think that's very much me. Yeah, it's one of the scariest movies I ever saw. I think for most people, that's not the case. I think that's a good one. You know, you got to think outside the box a little bit. I mean, the basic. Like a lot of the old Stephen King shitty movies could potentially work. You know, Silver Bullet, Stand By Me, if you think your 13-year-old daughter would be interested. And again, I know it's not horror, but it's, you know, I feel like it introduces that sort of mature concept. There was a Disney movie called The Watcher in the Woods. That's a really good one for kids because it's a legit scary movie, but it was made to be a kid's scary movie. Also along those lines, what I think would be a good one, Coraline. That's obviously not a classic, but it's not a great adaptation of the book. It might just be better to read your kid the book. But I think that's a good one that the 13-year-old could be into. That's really hard to say, though. It's the Albert Finney version of A Christmas Carol is pretty scary. Also a musical. Also a Christmas Carol. So I feel like I'm really, I feel like I am not holding to the term classic. I'm barely holding on to the term horror. So again, I'm thinking in terms of curriculum. I'm thinking of films that will help your child grow into someone who likes horror movies.
Wow.
All of the movies that are like that are horror movies.
Yeah. Another thing is horror is a lot of people call a lot of things horror, where I would prefer
the thriller. Word.
Yeah, I would prefer they be very, very much more specific, like slasher or thriller or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the reason I like, I don't think of myself really as a horror fan, but I do like thrillers, and I like even supernatural thrillers. And I like Bram Stoker's Dracula. I like that book. I've read it more than once. If I've read a book more than once, that's a big deal. You know, I like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I mean, I like the books. I mean, I would recommend books to a 13-year-old to read, like the classic stuff.
You may have accidentally screwed yourself here. Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula would be great. I think that would be a great one.
Oh, the film?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose. I don't know how sensitive he is to like nudity and stuff or whatever, because it's rated R, I think.
Yeah, for like that one scene. I mean, I will admit, Azure Talon, if you are worried about your daughter seeing boobs or off-screen biting Keanu Reeves' dick, which admittedly is a thing.
Was that a thing?
Yeah, that whole scene is a disaster. If you watch that scene with the vampire women, they're attractive. Outside of that, there is nothing sexy about that thing. They're like licking his wrist and shit. And then one of them basically like puts her face in his crotch, and based on the implication of how he reacts, she basically bites him on the junk, or at least really close to the junk.
Wow, I don't remember that at all.
Then 9-foot-tall Gary Oldman with the funny hair comes in and gives them a baby to eat instead. That whole scene is fucked up. That's the sexy scene, and it is not sexy. There are boobs in it.
I don't remember all of that.
Fine. Like, that's the thing. You don't remember it because it absolutely isn't necessary. And I think, it's just not necessary at all. I think that would potentially be a good one.
Yeah, okay. Now that we've gone through all of that, thumbs up on it, huh?
I still like the movie overall. That scene is dumb as hell. Yeah. But I actually really enjoy that movie. I don't know. Here's what I will say. It really needs to be tailored to your kid.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean,
I know someone who showed their 14-year-old the movie Zombieland. I really liked the movie Zombieland. Zombieland is insanely violent. Like, the opening credits is watching people and zombies getting butchered and like blood splashing onto the screen kind of thing for a long time. Like, it is a grossly violent movie. It's also loaded with swearing, so much swearing, hard R. Their kids loved it and we're fine and we're not at all traumatized. And I understand that. I also know some kids of that age who have no business seeing a movie like that.
Yeah. Like,
it's really gonna be what gets your kids, what doesn't get your kids. What are you wanting to get out of the experience? What are you not? It's a very safe bet to start them with the classics, like William is suggesting. The problem being, they may be bored as shit.
Yeah, that's a concern. I mean, I love them, but not all of them.
It's William.
Yeah, it's me. So, you know, one of a more recent movie that I've seen a couple times and I thought it was pretty good was Skeleton Key with, what's her name? Houston.
I think curious about that one.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I've never actually
seen that one. It got really good reviews and stuff.
I mean, it had its problems, but I thought it was pretty good. And I don't remember it having, I mean, it was, I mean, I don't remember it having anything. I don't know what it's rated is what I'm saying. I don't remember it having any R-rated stuff in it, but it also was a story that if you're prone to having nightmares about something, I think it would probably do that. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm not prone to get nightmares watching things. So
is your kid susceptible to real life versus supernatural? Like if I had a kid, I would be way more worried showing them stuff about home invaders murdering a family than about kids accidentally unleashing a demon.
Mm.
Because one of those can and does happen. And the other one, not so much. So like there's some interesting sort of found footage ones that I enjoy that I might Hell House LLC is a possibility. The House is October Built. These are good, in my opinion, found footage movies, which some people think is an oxymoron. But some of it is too much just like real life. I mean, Hell House is got supernatural elements, but it still feels very realistic. And House is October Built is really smart. It's like there's nothing supernatural about it. And so it's just kind of creepy and scary in that way. So the answer is we don't know, Azure Talon.
Yeah, we really don't know.
You're your own damn kid. What the hell are you doing? Making it our problem. This one, though, I really feel like some of our listeners are going to have better answers than us. But get on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and give some suggestions. Not only for the sake of Azure Talon and his... I mean, just complete inability to handle his own child. Also, because I'd be curious. I might watch some of them. Like, what do you got?
13 is such an interesting age. I mean, kids run the gamut, right? I mean, you can have a 13-year-old who is still kind of stuck at 10, or you can have a 13-year-old who's going on 19. I mean, it's just crazy how...
I have known 11-year-old teenagers and 17-year-old children.
Yeah.
And 13 sure. Smack in the middle. Like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's really, you know, and for some kids, 13 is going to be the perfect time to start getting into that genre and appreciating it.
You would think, because her father is incredibly immature. Her father is like a teenager himself. But that can go one of either ways. Maybe she emulates him, or maybe she has to be more responsible. Maybe she is the adult in the house, you know, that kind of thing. So we don't know.
Yeah,
she might. Maybe the question is, what movies will she let you watch, Azure Talon?
She might love Exorcist, but I mean, I know adults who can't handle Exorcist. I mean, it's just...
I know, and to be fair, I was awful glib with that one. I don't know that I've actually watched it.
Or even The Shining.
I do know I got nightmares from the making of featurette of The Exorcist.
Even The Shining really can bother some people.
Oh, here's what's going... Okay, here's what's happening in my head. Oh! No, I have a really good one. I have a really good one that I just watched recently. Cronus on HBO Max, and is Guillermo del Toro's first movie when he was still basically a student. And it is interesting, and it's definitely horror, but it's not, I don't think it's scary. It's an interesting story. I don't think it's scary. That's not a bad one to start. What made me think this is, I was thinking earlier, Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too. There's
That's both less horrific and more horrific in really horrible ways.
Well, there's one scene that's really awful, and it's portraying a real thing. It's not portraying.
That's the problem. Is I'm like, there's some actual shit here.
Yeah. So I did think of that one too, but I don't. And I also thought of like Hellboy and stuff. Like, oh, that's got horror elements. That might be cartoon.
Because it's your kid, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That's a scary movie that's not scary. I am constantly horrified by that movie that I got made. But it's not really scary. And some of the classics like that, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, one of the various versions of that. The John Carpenter, The Thing.
Well, then you've got things like the Alien movies, or you've got...
Alien is not a bad choice. Alien is not a bad choice.
Event Horizon, I seem to recall that was kind of interesting.
Oh.
Abyss, I think, was it pretty good?
Yeah, Abyss is barely horror, which actually might make it perfect. So
it might be too old, too. It might not have aged well. I don't know.
Oh, Jaws. Fucking Jaws.
Well, yeah. Why didn't we think of that?
You run a very distinct risk that your child will refuse to swim in the ocean for years. We're in Iowa, or you're in Illinois, so like, whatever. Actually, you might be in Iowa too. You're in the Quad Cities. I don't know.
I'm having a weird identity issue here because I'm for a person that doesn't identify as a horror fan, I do seem to know quite a bit about it.
This could be a major revelation for me. It snuck up on me. I grew up, I was a child who hated horror movies, became a teenager who was fascinated by them but could not watch them, and then became an adult who watches a ton of them.
Well, here's the thing, though. I have always liked ghost stories. When I was in sixth grade, I entered a competition to write a playwriting competition for Halloween play. I mean, and I was excited about this in particular because it was Halloween and there were monsters in it. And it was, I mean, I think mine was the only one that actually had people dying in it.
And it was optioned to be a film and became Nightmare Before Christmas.
No, what I'm saying is, really, this is something I've been interested in my whole life. It's just, usually when I was growing up, what was called horror were movies that I was not interested in. And I have since tried to watch and hated as much as I expected I would.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just in the world I grew up in, what was called horror was so narrow and I didn't like it. But, you know, of course,
it's
nowadays,
a very broad category. It's like saying I like rock music.
You know, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite as broad as saying I like drama films, but it's close. It's close.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right about
that. Or actually, it's just as broad as saying I like comedy films. I think that's a fair assessment because there are a ton of comedies and whole subgenres of comedies that I cannot stand.
You mean
I absolutely love comedies. Yeah. Love a ton of comedies. So yeah, saying I like horror movies is a dangerous game. I will say a lot of subgenres I like. I enjoy most kinds of horror movies. Yeah, it's a tricky one to say. I base a lot on how many I watch, and I watch a lot of horror movies.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Based on that, I also like superhero movies, and I don't know if that's true. I found myself watching that scene from Endgame again, where all the Avengers show up through the portals. I love it every time. That's what I like about superhero movies. They tend to have crazy ass plots that don't make sense. They tend to have weird ass messaging. They tend to have a lot of filler I don't care about. And for most of the things that those movies do, I know movies that can do it better. That kind of blockbuster superhero movie can do a moment like that that makes the hairs on my arm stand up like no other kind of movie. And it's not, there's not a lot of credit to be given to the actors there or the writing. A lot of that is visual effects and music. But those moments, Star Wars and stuff does that too. Star Wars, you know how much I think Star Wars is incredibly dumb. And you know why? Because it is. It has these moments. It has these scenes that are just awe-inspiring and amazing and me goosebumps, and I love those. And that one in Endgame, I love that scene. Like, there's so much to not love about that movie, but I love that scene, and I can watch it over and over again.
Well, you know, one of the great things about comic books, the comic book experience, is splash pages. Yep. You know, you turn the page and the whole, both pages are taken up by some amazing piece of artwork that is at just the right time in the plot. And your eyes just get big and you're looking at every single detail that this artist must have taken weeks to produce this. And, you know, there are only certain types of stories you can tell in film or TV form that's going to have the equivalent of a splash page. Yep. And that's, you know, that's what you're looking at when you.
And there are things you can get in books that you can't properly film and things like that. I mean, all of the genres, there's a reason why we have these different mediums.
Yeah.
Right. My comic book, my hardcore comic book nerd friend will talk about old comic books and the number of times where they're like, yeah, and it was this story. Isn't that stupid and ridiculous? And then the other one says, the art was amazing. Me, not reading comics hardly at all, I'm like, who fucking cares? If the story's dumb.
Well,
you know, but it matters. I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, For me, I can't get into a comic book story if I don't like the art. But I think that's probably true. I probably, if the art's really good, maybe I can forgive a lot of aspects of the story. I haven't really thought about that, but that might be true.
And that's the Penny Arcade guys and all the video games and various bits of media. It's funny to see their diverging opinions because one of them is primarily a graphic artist. Mm. So he will love stuff that the pedantic nerdy wordsmith hates because of the art style, and pedantic nerdy wordsmith will have stuff that's great, but the other guy's like, no, it looks dumb, or there's like, this is, no. So yeah. I think I'm a story primary person in general, but I can appreciate these other things. And that scene in Avengers, I love it. It's a wholly a visual and auditory thing. The music has to be unmute. That scene's not that great.
right.
Yeah. And that's so built into Star Wars and the MCU. The musical themes are huge. I get the Avengers theme in my head sometimes, and I love it. And you know, Star Wars, John Williams.
I know.
I don't know why we're talking about that, but we should be done anyway. So go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your horror movies that you want to subject Azure Talon's kid to. Please, I think this would be really fun for us all to just gang up on him and ruin his child early via terrible horror movies. Also, write in to the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Next week is my birthday. But we're still going to record because that's how committed we are to you. And also because we're still in COVID, so it's not like I could do anything for my birthday. Mostly committed to you.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.